from WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Great show for you today. Let's go ahead and jump right into it. Today's topic for mastication and rumination is broccoli. And my guest here in the studio today is Chef Tyler Cord of Number 7 Restaurant and Number 7 Sub. Hey, Tyler.
Hi.
Tyler's got a new cookbook coming out called Broccoli, available at shortstackeditions.com. Now, I am kind of proud and surprised to tell you that I'm pretty sure you are the first chef I've ever had as a guest on The Sporkful.
That's cool.
This is episode number 180. of my food podcast. I don't actually talk to that many chefs, but I love what you do at Number 7.
Thanks.
And there's a couple things that I think are big things for you that are big things for me here on The Sporkful, which is why I've been drawn to what you do and wanted to have you on. One is I think that you put a lot of priority on textural contrast, crunch, crisp. These are things that I see in a lot of your foods.
Sure.
The structural integrity of sandwiches. We will talk later about your broccoli sub.
Okay.
You when I tell people that you have created something called a broccoli sub, their first question is like, how? But you're sort of an engineer also, I think.
I really think that a lot of engineers would probably disagree with you, but because I did just put broccoli on a sandwich, but I appreciate the sentiment, and okay. Thank you.
Well, and I also love you kind of have a great combination of highbrow, lowbrow, which I think we sort of have here on The Sporkful, whether you want to call it middle brow or whatever, of like very clever, interesting ingredients, but then you also have a sandwich that's got Fritos in it.
Sure.
So you got to do it all. So, Tyler, you are well known for your love of broccoli. Some of the best known dishes at your restaurants include a broccoli sub, fried broccoli, and double-decker broccoli tacos, all of which are featured in your cookbook. And we're going to discuss those dishes in particular later on. But first, let's just talk general broccoli philosophy here. I think we're all familiar with the typical perception of broccoli. It's boring.
Yeah.
It's difficult to make it palatable. But yet, we sort of feel obligated. It's like, you know it's good for you. You kind of just have to do it.
You're lucky there's a table between us, my friend. I'm fighting words.
Well, go on. Make the case.
But no, but I mean, that's a true... It's all, broccoli is such a weird symbol for exactly that. I mean, it's the one that it seems politicians always use to describe things that kids are forced to eat that they don't want to eat. I guess I don't have a very established defense for that because it's just so stupid. You know, like, it's so delicious. I wonder what everybody's parents were doing to broccoli that made them all hate it so much. Because my mom, who I'm sure will listen to this, she is a wonderful cook, but she wasn't ever trained or, I don't know, she just cooked broccoli and we ate it and I loved it. I've just always loved it. So I guess I've never totally understood this crazy aversion that people have to it or even just kind of apathy towards it.
The aversion aside, I just got beamed here from another planet and you are going to try to convince me that the best thing I could eat, I want to try everything in this new planet that I just arrived at and you want broccoli to be the first thing and you got to convince me right now why it's so great.
Sure.
Go.
All right. Well, there's this plant, see, and it comes out of the ground and you can eat the whole damn thing and it's every single ounce of it is 100% delicious. And it's great for you, and you're probably in need of some nutrients having traveled so far. it lasts forever. It's super easy to cook. I mean, I guess it's kind of the epitome of, like, easy, delicious, good-for-you food. I can't imagine what else would be as good.
Well, I think one thing that maybe that draws you to it, which I also love about broccoli has built-in textural contrast.
It does, yes.
You got the firm stems, you've got the soft florets, and those florets have sort of special properties. There are not, like, a carrot is only going to be one texture.
Sure.
All right.
You're right. Broccoli, the stem can be so crunchy and awesome, but those florets, not only are they kind of more yielding and soft, but they are literal, like, vegetable mops for sauces and things like that.
And the absorbency of the broccoli florets is such a crucial component in classic broccoli dishes, like broccoli with a cheese sauce or broccoli at the Chinese takeout, the way it absorbs that sort of sugary, salty, oily brown sauce. You know, that is sort of magic broccoli right there.
Good call.
But what are some of the things that you'd love to get those florets to soak up?
What are the things that I love to get those
for? Besides butter, which is obvious. I mean,
sure,
butter,
olive oil, things like that.
Right.
I love a nice, like, pasta with the tomato sauce with broccoli in it. I mean, the broccoli soaks it all up, and it's beautiful. What else do I like? Mayonnaise, obviously, on a sandwich. And broccoli florets make me pretty happy. And really, any kind of vinaigrette or salad dressing works wonderfully to absorb all that flavor.
Now, you mentioned in your book that when you get home late at night, you love a ham, cheese, and broccoli sandwich. Now, most people would have just stopped at ham and cheese. What does the broccoli add to a late-night ham and cheese sandwich?
It adds, first and foremost, broccoli, which is,
but from the,
which is something I'm looking for in
right,
a sandwich.
I mean, from the eating experience.
Who stops at ham and cheese? That's not living. You know what I mean? That's surviving and that's subsistence and whatever. But it adds that thing that makes you feel just a little bit better about eating a ham and cheese sandwich late at night because it's healthy-ish, depending on how you cook it. And it's delicious. I mean, there's no texture in a ham and cheese sandwich. And don't get me wrong, I love a ham and cheese sandwich. But adding the bright crunch of some salty steamed broccoli is one of the great things in the world. And if you've never tried it, you would be wise to do so.
What about the stems? This is something you also write about in the book, is that the stems not only should not be discarded, but can be quite delicious. You got a recipe for pickled broccoli stems in there. Talk to me about things that people can do with the stems.
There's a lot of stem recipes in there. It's, you know, the stems, the broccoli, it's one of those weird things with vegetables where people kind of have this kind of notion that some parts are good, some parts are bad. And so, like, to throw away a broccoli stem, but then to buy kohlrabi is kind of a waste of time because it's kind of cultivated to be. Kohlrabi is kind of a cultivar that is essentially in some ways a broccoli stem, you know? It gets a little woody as you get closer and closer to the end of the stem. It's farther away from the florets, but if you just take a vegetable peeler to it, it's just as usable as the rest of the stem and is delicious and wonderful and used for a lot of things.
So peel it.
Unless you're going to puree it, and then it doesn't even matter. Then you don't have to peel it.
Okay. And I actually like – I think also people should take into consideration that that is a great shape. You end up – the stem, you get these little discs of crunch.
Yeah.
That you can cook them in almost any way. You can put almost anything on them. You can use them. You can dip them into other things. There's so much potential there. In your cookbook, you write that when broccoli is overcooked, it turns into the bone marrow of the vegetable kingdom.
I did say that, didn't I?
Tell me about that.
Obviously, I love broccoli. I've always served at the restaurants since the beginning, but I've always kind of shot for this kind of perfectly cooked, lightly, you know, still bright green, still very crunchy broccoli, despite the fact that, like, my dad, for instance, likes his broccoli, and he likes most vegetables cooked, like, obliterated and cooked to death. And I've always actually really liked that also, but that seems like that's home cooking versus restaurant cooking where everything has to be pretty. But I was starting to kind of rethink that and think more about how can we use broccoli in a different way. But then I was in Los Angeles and I had lunch at Pizzeria Mazza.
Okay.
They had a pizza on the menu that said mozzarella, tomato sauce, and then it had the phrase long-cooked broccoli, which I was like, what? I wonder if that's what it sounds like. I don't know. So I ordered it, and it was exactly what it sounded like. It was a bunch of broccoli that it looked like maybe had kind of just gently braised with olive oil and some chilies and salt and cooked it until it was mush and then put it on a pizza, and it was phenomenal. I mean, it was what I love broccoli. I eat it all the time, but this was like, wow, who – it seems ridiculous. Like, it's as if they said overcooked – long-cooked broccoli. I'm sure that they sat for a little while and talked, and, like, they were like, how do we – basically, because I love overcooked broccoli, like, how do we – put that on a pizza without saying overcooked broccoli.
Right.
Slow-cooked broccoli, it turns out, is And, you know, I still haven't actually turned that into anything on the menu at any of my restaurants. But it is, it's like bone marrow. It's this kind of, as much as bone marrow is kind of like, has the texture of butter, essentially, of warm butter, but with the flavor of a cow, overcooked broccoli, or I shouldn't even call it overcooked because, let's face it, I like it. Still tastes like broccoli, obviously, but it's got this just like melty, beautiful texture, which I think a lot of people are upset by and afraid of because that's how they've had it in the past, and they, I don't know, it's just looking at it in a different way. The same thing looked in it, looked right. at it a different way.
Well, it's very funny that you make a point of the name because literally the next question I had written down was, but if overcooking it, to use your term, turns it into something so delicious, is it really correct to say that it's been overcooked?
Right. Good question. Yeah.
So it has not been. It's been long cooked. So give me a ballpark. Yeah. If people are listening and they want to experience broccoli bone marrow, at what temp and how long am I cooking it? Can you overcook overcooked broccoli?
Well, I think you'll just end up eventually with like a puree. And what's wrong with that? You know, then you've got broccoli soup. So I would say probably no. The one thing that is... The one thing, if you're looking for this kind of marrowy, awesome intensity, though, is you do need to be concerned about the fact that it is a vegetable and it does absorb water. So you want to kind of limit the amount of liquid that it's cooking in. If you wanted just to do a very simple version of it, I would say probably, you know, in a saucepan with some olive oil and some salt and not covered so that it's not steaming. It's just gently cooking for a long, long time. And I would probably do it on low heat for, I don't know, half an hour for a while until it is not pretty and doesn't make any sense. And then I would spread it immediately on toast and feel really good about yourself.
There are a lot of very interesting recipes in your book. You got roast beef sandwiches with broccoli marmalade, broccoli Caesar salad, pork and broccoli meatball burgers, as if we needed any evidence that you're not a vegetarian. pickled broccoli stems, and a whole bunch more. But we're going to focus our discussion now on three of your best-known broccoli creations and use those as a guide for the rest of our discussion on broccoli. Now, those three dishes are fried broccoli, your broccoli sub, and your double-decker broccoli tacos. Fried broccoli first. Now, for folks who haven't had it, haven't seen it, I have had the enjoyable experience of having it. It is one huge hunk of broccoli, stem, florets, and all deep-fried. Tell me more about how it's made so people can help to get an image in their heads of what this is like.
We dip it in a tempura batter that we've kind of spiked with some balsamic vinegar and sesame oil and things like that. And we fry it for a couple minutes, and it steams inside that tempura. And it is, I don't know, when I was coming up with it, I was thinking about like the sesame and in the batter because I liked that so much. And so I was that kind of took me to a tahini place. So there's a black bean hummus on the plate, and the hummus kind of led me to dill. So there's this salad of dill and grapefruit. It seemed like it wanted a little bitter too to break up the sweet and the greasy, and just some arugula to kind of also add some bitter. And it's tossed with this kind of grapefruity, shallot-y vinaigrette.
And what, you know, when you slice open this giant hunk of fried broccoli, there's sort of a gooey center.
There's some goo. Is that
uncooked batter?
Well, no, I mean, it's cooked because, as you may have noticed, it's like 8 million degrees
in
there.
Right.
It's cooked. It just doesn't set because it's not on the outside. But again, when we that's part of the reason that we flavor the batter so much because it does get in those florets to some degree.
See, I thought that totally made the dish.
Yeah, no, I love it.
The crunchy, crunchy tempura exterior with the gooey, oozy center.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Can I give you a suggestion for the fried broccoli?
Please.
You know how you may have seen around sort of food fairs and festivals, whether it's sort of your Midwestern country fair or even some of the trendier Brooklyn-esque types of places that I end up.
Yeah.
It's a big thing to sell a whole giant turkey leg.
Yeah.
And you see, and the thing sells itself because one person buys one and walks around the fair holding this ridiculous huge hunk of meat and everyone else says, where did you get that? Where did you get that?
Sure.
It looks amazing. Problem is, to me, turkey leg is one of the more overrated meat foods out there. It's full of tendons and ligaments and chewy, inedible things that make it almost impossible to really sink your teeth into it and
get
a whole
it's pretty intense,
mouthful of meat. It's not a great food, but it looks great. You see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Wrap a little foil handle around the base of your broccoli and sell it just like that at the sort of cool food fest around the country. Put it on a cart.
Do you think if I called it broccoli legs, people would be into that? Or would they be freaked out?
Broccoleg.
Broccoleg sounds pretty sweet.
Done. That's yours. You can have that, Tyler.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All I ask in return for giving you this million-dollar idea is a little, like, a credit card that whenever I go to one of these stands, I can get one for free.
Okay. I'll work that out.
Okay.
Next time you see me at the Sterling Renaissance Fair selling broccolegs, I will... I'll probably just give you don't even need the card. I'll just give it to
okay,
you.
Okay, all right, fair enough. All right, let's move on to the broccoli sub.
Okay, then.
This was my first experience with your cooking. It was at Number 7 Sub. And people were telling me, you got to check this place out. And the broccoli sub is sort of a marvel of sandwich engineering, first of all. And deliciousness.
So dramatic, yeah.
Because you would assume that, like, the broccoli would fall out.
How does he put broccoli on bread? What is this man doing?
I think you're being modest, Tyler. And, I mean, I'm sure you must have put thought into how big to chop the broccoli. Because if it's too big or too small, it's going to be tough to sandwichize.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess vegetables in general can be a challenge in that sense. You know, like, with asparagus, I really... For sandwich construction purposes, it just makes so much sense to leave the asparagus whole and put it on a loaf of sub bread. You know, it just looks perfect. It's awesome. But it turns out that when you eat that, you pull all of the asparagus out.
That's right. It's so long bite. And stringy. It's hard to bite through it that way.
Yeah. And so vegetables, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, things like that, too. Also, if they're not super, super cooked, you know, they're a little – they're fibrous and they're challenging. So you do have to cut them fairly small, which then makes sandwich construction a little more annoying. But
if you cut them too small, you lose some of that the texture, the tooth sinkability of the stems and things. So there is a balance you're going
sure,
for.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so the broccoli sub has broccoli, mayo, fried shallots, ricotta salata, which is sort of a dry, salty cheese, and then lychee muchum.
Yes.
How do you describe that?
Well, I made it up. But it's muchum is a Korean word that means like salad or mixed, and it implies it's almost always a cucumber muchum thing, and it is a dish that is a cold cucumber salad that's spicy and garlicky and a little tart and basically tastes like a cucumber kimchi that has not been fermented to some degree. It gets its acid from vinegar though instead of from fermenting, so it's got a kind of brighter, fresher taste. And so I made that marinade for cucumbers a long time ago for a sandwich that we were doing at the restaurant, and then just started putting that marinade on kind of everything I could find. And lychees are one of the greatest things that you can soak in that.
Well, and this again gets into contrast, because I feel like the lychees bring some sweet, they bring some spice.
Sure.
You've got the crunch of the broccoli, the crunch of the fried shallots, the... salt of the ricotta salata. I love it.
Good.
And I should mention that we shot a video of you making the broccoli sub. My friends at WNYC helped out with this video. And if you want to see the construction of Tyler Cord's broccoli sub, and also we're posting the recipe for the broccoli sub at sporkful.com. I'll share it through my social media channels. And of course, it's also at WNYC.org. Let's move on to the double-decker broccoli tacos,
okay,
which you say is the most popular dish at your restaurant.
Yeah, we sell so many of those. It's crazy. They're also really cheap. Maybe that's why I don't know.
You do a happy hour, $3 double-decker broccoli tacos.
We do.
You can't beat that.
You cannot.
This is, as I'm sure is the case with most of your cooking, inspired by Taco Bell.
To some degree, yes.
It's the crunchy corn taco. With the soft flour tortilla wrapped around the outside with refried beans to fuse them together. And then inside the taco shell, you have what exactly?
Food, as opposed to what they do at Taco Bell. and I would love to say that is one of the great... You know, we talked about textural contrast, but that is like the greatest one that I wish I had invented. Like that is just so... The crunchy tortilla and the soft tortilla is so, so, so excellent. I wish that everybody embraced that because they're so good. I wish I could eat those at every restaurant.
I agree 100%. It is great. And I think it serves not only a great purpose for textural contrast, but also structural integrity.
Agreed.
Because a crunchy corn taco is really a poor vessel. for a food. I mean, you bite into one of those things, they splinter, they crack, sure. They break. When you use the soft flour tortilla on the outside and fuse it with cheese and or beans, you are creating an encasing that holds the corn tortilla together.
Yeah.
So it's a great food in that respect also.
Agreed. It's fantastic.
So you got like in there, you put like a pureed broccoli that's got a lot of vinegar. I would almost equate it to like North Carolina style pulled pork, but broccoli.
Sure. Yeah. It's like we shred the broccoli and we saute it with a pretty tart vinegary vinaigrette. And the beans in between, by the way, are the same black bean hummus that are on that broccoli dish, the fried broccoli dish, that is. There's some feta cheese in there. It's also some fried shallots.
I want to ask you about taco construction.
Okay.
Because you got cheese in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got cheese. Now, if I can describe this in a way that people can picture it, when you fill a taco, a hard taco shell, let's just say that it's in a V formation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You the way you do yours, you put the cheese down and then the broccoli filling.
Right.
But now when you eat, and this is it's similar when you make a traditional Mexican-style taco. Maybe people put the meat down and they put their veggies or sour cream or cheese. You layer it from the bottom to the top of the V.
Sure.
But when you go to eat a taco, when you go to put it into your mouth, you don't insert it into your mouth in the V formation. You generally turn it on its side.
Right.
Into more of a sandwich-style grip and sure. Put it into your mouth that way.
Yeah, you get the corner first.
Right. And now the layers are now vertical strips instead of horizontal layers.
I see what you're saying.
Which changes the way the food enters your mouth and hits your tongue. Is that something you've put thought into? What are your thoughts on that?
That's ridiculous, Dan. If I said yes, that I think about that a lot, would you be happy?
Yes.
Okay. Then
I would be happy if you just tell me the truth. But this is
the truth. The truth is that
no detail is too small.
When I first made the taco and I was holding it in my hand and I put the broccoli in and then I topped it with some feta cheese. I wasn't even thinking about the flavor of the feta. I just thought it would look so pretty. Like there's never been a taco with feta crumbled on it. I wanted that. I wanted the fried shallot-y stuff on top. But in the end, everything just fell off the top. So the feta then got bumped down and got put inside so that. It was literally while we made it and then put it down flat on a plate, it just wouldn't all dump out. But then it turns out that I also truly love that briny, awesome flavor of feta cheese. And I love having it on the bottom and I love having it kind of go to either end so that as opposed to if it was on the top, it would really only hold onto the very, very kind of crescent of the taco. You would bite into it and you would not get that cheese on your first bite. And I feel like that's kind of a bummer. So I like it better, and in the end, I like it. So it wasn't I didn't do this to make this happen, but I like that when you bite into that corner, you're getting some of everything.
You want cheese in the first bite.
Exactly.
Have you considered mixing the cheese and broccoli filling together before putting them into the taco?
I have not. I guess, though, but then I do like also, though, that it's a significant thing. Like, you get a bite of it, and you're very aware that you're eating feta cheese. And then as you kind of work in, your first bite is cheese. Your second bite is, this is hard to, like, I guess just describe with words. But
your second bite,
you're going up to the top, and you're probably not getting cheese in it. And that's when you're like, oh, that cheese actually was really awesome. And then you go back and get it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, I like having not every bite be exactly the same.
Well, that is a huge issue here on The Sporkful that we talk about in great detail, which is the never-ending debate between bite consistency and bite variety.
Yeah, which is a really – which with sandwich construction is one of the hardest things because every bite kind of inevitably is the same.
I would argue that in a sandwich that the sandwich form is designed for bite consistency.
It is, yeah.
You should have bite consistency in a sandwich.
But I think it's harder to maintain – given bite consistency, I think it's much harder to maintain an exciting eating experience when you have achieved bite consistency because that's boring. You know, it's like every bite is going to be exactly the same. So how do you make that fun?
Well, it's not exactly. I think there's a natural.
Sure.
In a sandwich, you get the perimeter will always be different from the interior. So roughly speaking, there's going to be two kinds of bites in a typical sandwich.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
The reason why I ask, and this is, I'm curious to sort of pick your brain about this, the issue of bite consistency versus bite variety, which is that if you wanted equal parts feta and broccoli filling in every bite, then it would make more sense to mix them.
Sure.
Before you insert them.
Totally. When we talked about doing this, I watched a couple of the videos, and I saw your crazy pizza move, which I liked, where you tore off the crust, and you did that move.
Right. When you, I removed the crust of the pizza and laid it into the slice and then folded the slice around it.
Which was sweet, but now I'm starting to understand that you are maybe a little obsessed with bite consistency, aren't you?
Because I
see what you're saying about the taco, but I generally, in general, prefer inconsistency.
I think bite consistency is better in some situations, bite variety is better in other situations.
Okay.
What I talk about here on The Sporkful is more like which situations are which.
I see.
You clearly, you made the choice, I want bite variety in this taco.
Right.
Which I'll be honest, when I first bit into my first bite, I got a lot of feta cheese.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I mean, I love feta cheese, but I was kind of like, you know, I was kind of in it for the broccoli. But you're right that as I moved around and got different bites, I came around and came to really appreciate.
Yeah, overall, it's a broccoli experience. Just for construction ease sake, we put the cheese in the bottom. I love the way that functions to kind of overwhelm and then like retreat and then come back. But then ultimately, I think it ends up as this balanced, awesome thing, as opposed to kind of the opposite. If the feta was sprinkled on top, and you just got little wisps of it. Yeah, for me, it wouldn't be the same thing, and I don't think, I mean, I think it would still be great, but I don't think it would be as awesome.
Chef Tyler Cord, number 7 sub, number 7 restaurant. The new cookbook is called Broccoli. It's available at shortstackeditions.com. And a quick shout out to Shortstack, which is a really cool new publisher. They started off raising money on Kickstarter. It's sort of the apotheosis of Brooklyn. But they do one-ingredient cookbooks. They're small cookbooks. They're not expensive, and they're focused only on one ingredient. There's one about eggs, strawberries, buttermilk. They're beautifully done. They're hand-stitched together. They have wonderful recipes, and the next one out is Tyler's book about broccoli. So check that out and all of the great books at shortstackeditions.com.
They're all great. Buy them all.
So, Tyler, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been lovely, Dan.
And again, folks, remember to check out the video of Tyler assembling a broccoli sub and the recipe for the sub at sporkful.com or at wnyc.org. And I hope you'll connect with me on social media, on Twitter at The Sporkful, on Facebook, facebook.com/sporkful. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a show all about matzah. Just in time for Passover, I traveled to the Manischewitz factory in Newark, New Jersey to tape a show about matzah. I interviewed the rabbi who's the head of kosher certification for Manischewitz, and I interviewed the Southern Baptist factory manager, a guy named Randall from Georgia, all about matzah too. It's a lot of fun. That'll be in 2 weeks. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.